Are you ready to talk baseball? Well, step up to the plate. You're listening to Passion for the Pastime. And here's your host, Walter.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? And welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Hope you are doing well, staying safe, and being healthy out there. On this episode of the podcast, we open up the second half of 162 of the 2021 baseball season. We're going to open it up with, I feel, a team that is going to have some tough decisions to make in a couple of weeks. We're going to talk with Minnesota Twins beat writer Dan Hayes of The Athletic, because the Twins are one of those teams that you look at their roster, and we're just coming off of the All-Star break. They didn't have too many All-Stars named, but they have a good club. I mean, they have plenty of guys that could be difference makers on that team. You look at it and you wonder, how are they still so bad? How are they at the cellar? I mean, right, I don't have the standings right in front of me as as I'm speaking, but last time I checked, they were pretty damn close to the bottom. And now that I look it up, they're only ahead of Kansas City. And that's only by 3 games. 15 games out. 11.5 from the wild card. But, man, that's going to be a tough road. It's not, it's not impossible. But being that far away going into the deadline, you have to expect that the Twins are going to blow it up. They have plenty of guys that could be difference makers and turn a team that is, a divisional winner, one round in the playoffs, take that team to the next level. And you try to find those type of players that can elevate your team. It depends on what your team needs, but the Twins have a lot of pieces that they can move. Do they move on from Jose Berrios? Do they move on from Kenta Maeda? Josh Donaldson, he has a big contract, but do the Twins move on from that also? Nelson Cruz, who needs a DH? Nobody in the NL yet, because that's going to come at some point. But AL teams, you need a DH. I'm gonna talk all of this with Dan Hayes to see what the Twins could potentially do moving into the All-Star break, or moving into the second half of the year post All-Star break. Because the Twins, like I said, I feel like they hold the balance for some of these divisions. But we're going to get into all that coming up here in a couple of minutes. But before we get into that, did you guys enjoy the All-Star break? It still feels a little weird, right? I mean, the All-Star break, some people love it, some people hate it. I enjoy the home run derby, but hell, they change the rules every couple of years. I was watching it the other day, and I was just like, what's going on now? They have all these different rule changes, and it was a little bit, I think it was the same as far as the last home run derby, because it was 2 years ago that we had a home run derby in 2019. We didn't have one last year. And spoiler alert, if you didn't watch the Home Run Derby, or if you plan on watching it, or you recorded it, I don't know. I recorded it because I was at work, because I was working and wasn't really watching it, but am I really going to sit down and watch the whole thing? I'll probably go and watch Juan Soto and Shohei Ohtani showdown. Spoiler alert, doesn't end the way you thought it was, did it? But the Home Run Derby was amazing. Can I just go on and say, because when you look at all the All-Star weekends, right? I mean, I guess it's really only MLB and NBA that has like a whole skeptical of it. But the Home Run Derby, right up there with the three-point contest. And I would say the three-point contest is better than the dunk contest now, because the dunks have, I mean, we've seen every dunk that can happen. I mean, come on, let's move on from that. Make the three-point contest the highlight, which that is what it is. That's what we do in the NBA, right? Everyone's chucking up threes. But I think nothing comes close to the Home Run Derby. And can I just say, can we go ahead and just, can we always have it in Coors Field? The home run derby, not the game, but the home run derby, can we just always have it at Coors Field? Why isn't this a thing already? I mean, I was sitting there, again, I was working. I was sitting there counting through some of these home runs of 450 plus. These guys had double digits. And Ohtani, in his round against Juan Soto, I want to say he had close to 8,500 plus home runs. By the way, Juan Soto had the longest home run. I think it was at 520. Took the over. There was a bet on my bookie, and it was set at longest home run in the Derby over under 517 and a half. I took the over. I beat it by 3 feet. I beat it by 3 feet. But can we just always have it at Coors Field, the home run derby? It was really exciting. And I think we go back and say this every single year. Wow, these guys are crazy. I do wish that Vlad Jr. was in it. But hey, he homered in the All-Star game. So it's okay. It's a good trade-off. That guy's talented, man. That guy's talented. As far as everyone on the All-Star field, he excites me the most. He's just fantastic to watch. I try to watch as much as I can, as much Vlad as I can, and the All-Star game did it for me. So, Pete Alonso, he goes on and wins back-to-back, and I'm not sure how many times that's happened. I think it's only happened a few times in the history, so we'll have to see if he comes back for a three-peat. I don't think that's ever happened. But home run derby, it was great. All-Star game, it was great. Bo Bichette had a big standing ovation as he got introduced in Colorado, as his dad, Dante Bichette, played in Colorado. And Nolan Arenado got a huge standing ovation. So that must have been really cool for him also. But the coolest thing, it wasn't the home run derby. It wasn't the game itself. It was the opening ceremony where, obviously, this was the first All-Star game since the passing of Hank Aaron. And they did plenty of tributes. And the one prior to first pitch, I just have to tell, like, I'm thinking it through my head again. And they're showing it on TV again. I have my TV on. They're showing, had his wife come out. And let me just tell you, they did a good job on it. And I can honestly say that I've only teared up twice watching sports. The one time, first time, was 2011 opening day when the Giants would raise up the 2010 World Series banner. And if you know me, you know my history. 2010 was a really rough year for me and my family. And just to be able to celebrate that, all the emotions came back of that October. And just what that World Series meant. It was special. So, yeah, you bet your ass I teared up on opening day. Everyone's looking at, and everyone else was tearing up too, I think for different reasons. But that was one time that yes, I did get emotional as that flag got raised up. And then the second time was watching the Hank Aaron tribute. It was nice. And just, you know, I have the book. I had a hammer. Haven't started reading it yet, but I have it. I plan on reading it soon. Read a few pages of it, but I plan on reading it and finishing it in its entirety, the biography of Hank Aaron. Takes you through everything that he endured, everything he went through. And that's kind of what the video captured. Not the baseball player only, but the man, the human, in Hank Aaron. And what he did and what he stood for. And yeah, I teared up. So that's number two. That's time number two. And also, what I would like to say about the All-Star game, the unis looked pretty good. A lot of mixed reaction on social media about the unis for the All-Star game, but I personally like them. They, you know, Nike did a good job on those. What they missed on was prior to the break, we had the City Connect jerseys be unveiled at Oracle Park Friday, Saturday, Sunday going into the All-Star break. I was there Friday. Let me just tell you, it did not sit well with me. I mean, yeah, they're undefeated. That's what everyone's going on. They're saying, oh, they're undefeated in these jerseys. Just keep wearing them. Okay, relax. Relax. They've won 50-plus in the other jerseys, okay? So don't give me that undefeated crap. Like, come on. But the orange sleeves a little bit, you know, the long sleeves that the players wear underneath, it made it look a little better. But God, it was a rough watch to see those jerseys on the field. I can't get past it. I can't get behind it. I'm sorry. I'm trying, but I can't. So where Nike does a good job on the All-Star ones, they missed on the San Francisco Giants ones. And Bay Area native Dan Hayes, I got to get his take on these jerseys too. I got to see if he's seen them, first of all, and what he thinks of them. Being from the Bay Area, I like to value his opinion on the matter. So coming up next, we're going to speak with Minnesota Twins beat writer Dan Hayes for The Athletic. You're listening to Passion for the Pastime podcast. All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast, Passion for the Pastime. Your host, Walter, here. And we are diving back into Minnesota because the trade deadline is upon us. And we kind of figured that Minnesota is going to play a big part in the deadline. At least that's what I think. I'm going to get the thoughts of Dan Hayes, the beat writer for the Minnesota Twins for The Athletic. Dan, how you doing this morning?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I know we kind of got crisscross on my end at the beginning of the week, so I really appreciate you taking the time. But before we get into the Twins, because I have a lot of questions, and I'm sure that you've heard all these questions going on all year, and especially leading up to the end of this month, there's a lot of questions surrounding the Twins, whether they're going to break it up, are they going to, you know, be strategic on who they ship out, what's the plan moving forward. But before we get into all of that, I have to remember, you are from the Bay Area, right? Like originally you're from Bay Area.
Yeah. I grew up in Rohnert Park, about an hour north of San Francisco. So yeah, I'm actually going to be back out there for the first time since pre-COVID in August. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, nice. They're playing Oakland, I assume.
No. That's the great part of covering a bad team is you can just take a few days off here or there. So I'm taking a weekend off in the middle of the month and flying home. So.
Hey, that's great, man. That's awesome. That's the silver lining, right? You have to look at the positive.
Yeah. You got to take the perks package. Always important.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Well, yeah. So dating back to your Bay Area roots, right? You're from the Bay Area. I don't know if you've seen these or if you've come across these in your time. I know you're a beat writer for the Twins, so maybe it never came across your desk, or maybe you saw it flipping through the MLB network. I don't know. But the Giants, you know, MLB and Nike had come out with City Connect jerseys, right? Did you see the ones that came out for the San Francisco Giants recently?
Okay. Well, first of all, you remember the area code hats they made like a month earlier? Like between that and this, what is MLB doing? Like those things, it looks like they're you know, I think it's a Napoleon Dynamite reference about the fluffy clouds that they're trying to send a picture of. Like she, it was just like the most horrible looking uniforms I've ever seen. And I mean, I'm thinking back, you know, now the old orange Giants jerseys from like the 80s, you know, back then nobody liked them. If they're properly paired with something, the old orange jerseys, they're not bad. They used to be hideous way back. And, you know, we've gone back on retro on all the jerseys, and what people used to think were ugly turn out to be great now. these will never have a turn where we look back and go, man, these would be great. There's just no way. These are the ugliest things I've ever seen. And I can't believe what, like, how did they convince the players to put those on? I mean, I guess they're contractually obligated, but my goodness, those things were just brutal.
The photo shoot, like, how did it go with the play? I want to know, like, how, I wanted to be a fly on the wall to see when they put these things on. Like, what did they really say? What did they really think about them? We kind of got, like, a little dive into it earlier in the week with Gossman. He was just like, yeah, you know, it could have had a little bit more color. And then he threw out a Alcatraz theme. I was just like, oh, yeah, I don't know. Anything would have been better than what came out. What's happening? We wear cream. What's going on here?
I know. Yeah, they're terrible looking jerseys, and they've been mocked properly, so that's good. The Golden Gate Bridge is cool and all, but that's a Warriors thing, you know? So
right. The Golden Gate Bridge looked cool on the sleeve. That was the only thing that I could really get behind, because even the G on the chest plate, like, I was just like, you know what? The G doesn't stand for Giants for these jerseys. Like, it stands for something else that comes every week over here in my parts on a Wednesday. You know what I mean? They come pick it up on Wednesday.
Well, we get it twice a week at my building on Friday and Monday. So
there you go, man. Yeah, it was crazy. I just needed to get your thoughts on that, because I agree, man. These jerseys are really bad. It's had mixed reaction across the Bay Area. Some people love them, some people don't. I think majority of them don't. But I was at the ballpark yesterday, and I was watching the Giants, obviously, and I would see these people wearing the jerseys, and I'm just like, oh, it makes it look worse in person. Like I can't get behind it, man. So I needed to get, another Bay Area native's perspective on these jerseys, definitely. But the Chicago White Sox one, like, you see that one, that was really nice, really clean. And then we get these ones for the Giants. So I don't know. I just had to get your opinion on that, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially with the Giants, you know what? Their jersey across the board is pretty much one of those ones you just don't mess with. I feel like the classic looks, you don't, and obviously getting different versions, that's fine. And trying stuff out is fine. But when you have something like that, it deserves to be royally mocked. And I think it's appropriately been done so online. So that part's good.
Yeah. All right. We are talking with Dan Hayes from the Bay Area, but he covers the Minnesota Twins for The Athletic. Man. All right. So missed the mark on the jerseys. I think the same thing could be said about the Twins this year. They've missed the mark on the field. What is going on with the Minnesota Twins, man? What happened?
Well, the pitching staff just never showed up. I mean, Jose Berríos has been fantastic. Michael Pineda was fantastic through the end of May and then got hurt and has not been very good since. And beyond that, the bullpen, you know, there's a few guys. Taylor Rogers is fantastic, but beyond that, there's just not much certainty. And so, you know, even with an offense that hits a lot of home runs, and I would say they're inconsistent as far as the offensive production, but they still score a lot. And even with that, you're not going to win when you have a bullpen that is turned up the way that the Twins have, between Alexander Colomé, who is having the worst year of his career, and technically, I believe, is off to the third worst start ever by a Twins reliever in franchise history through 85 games. That's where they're at, which means, unfortunately, that there's 70 plus more games to go before this is over. 77 to go, 77 more games of pain ahead on the schedule. But, they just have fallen apart, and it has not been easy to watch. And you look at where their depth was with their starters, all those guys are hurt. And I know this is a story across baseball. The team is hurt. And that's just crippled the pitching staff. It has just, they have no, you're looking at probably two good starts out of a turn through rotation right now. And J-Hap has been terrible. Matt Shoemaker was designated for assignment and is now pitching at AAA. So when you look at that, and Kenta Maeda was a Cy Young candidate last year. He finished second in the Cy Young vote, and he's basically had three good starts, maybe four. He pitched consistently into the sixth, seventh inning last year. And when you don't have those guys eating up the innings like that, it really, really just crushes everyone else, because there's such a huge workload on the bullpen. That has hurt them a ton. Also, Byron Buxton's been out basically since May 6th or so, and that's a killer too, because he had a fantastic April. He was player of the month, the American League. And actually that performance was so good from Buxton that he led the, he was third place in the AL All-Star vote up until the last hour and lost by 5,000, even though he wasn't going to play in the game. Teoscar Hernandez from Toronto overtook him in the very final hour to earn a spot in the All-Star game. But that just speaks volumes about how good Buxton was. And they've missed him a ton. So, you know, I mean, honestly, there's about two dozen things that have really gone wrong. And we're doing a 25-minute podcast as opposed to, you know, 3 hours. But I could honestly list everything and keep going. And it's just been one mess after another. And, you know, they're playing poorly with it. There's a ton of underperformance associated with it. And despite the White Sox having a ton of massive, like, you know, Yasmani Grandal went down the other day, and the White Sox still end up winning the series 2 out of 3. That's their fourth major player to be out of the lineup right now. And, you know, when you have those kinds of things, you have to react one way or the other. And the Twins have chosen to react the wrong way and played down. And now we're here at the trade deadline. And, man, it's a talented roster that is going to be picked apart.
Yeah, that's what's really intriguing when we get into the trade deadline. But before we get into that, you did mention Kenta Maeda, right? I mean, he's having a really rough season. And that was one of the things that we kind of spoke with the last time we spoke, was, all right, how's he going to follow up that fantastic shortened season last year, right? How's he going to follow that up? But he's had some health issues. Is that a reason why he's struggling so much, or is it more mechanically? What are you seeing from Kenta Maeda?
I think that the health issues are probably a big factor. He's a tough guy. He wants to pitch. And I think, you know, for him to speak up at some point about the groin issues that he was facing in May said a lot. It speaks volumes, essentially. And they think they probably were pitching him hurt for a while and that he just didn't let on. And that led to some arm issues. So, yes, there is definitely a chance that basically he pitched himself into the – or pitched hurt and really hurt the team in doing so, and probably would have benefited from going on the IL early. But, you know, there have been a variety of issues. You know, when we're in Chicago, he's talking about it being cold. This was like April or May. I can't remember. It's all blur at this point. But, you know, talk about the ball being – slippery. And then we had a game where it was a really hot night recently, and he talked about the ball being slippery. That was Chicago also. So I think he has been in a spot where not at 100%, you know, he's just not as effective, and he's turned it around. His last outing was fantastic. 6 innings, 10 strikeouts, 2 hits allowed. And he's had a couple of outings recently. His start at Texas had some really good moments, and then he gave up 2 homers to end it. And I think, you know, walked out with 5 2/3 and 2 runs allowed. He's starting to turn the corner, but without him being the guy that he was last year and eating up innings, but not just eating up innings, eating them up at extremely high levels of performance, without that guy, you know, it has definitely been a bind for them, because they were counting on him to do that. Jose Berríos has been even better than he was last year. Through the end of May, Pineda had a 2.62 ERA. So you had 3/5 of a potentially dynamite rotation, and it just hasn't been that. And I think, you know, Maeda, that's been a key thing. I checked with a bunch of team officials before the season as to, like, who the 5 most important Twins were to their success. And Maeda was high on that list. And, you know, the rest of the guys were actually performing pretty well that were on the list, and they were hanging around for a while. But, you know, it has just turned into a slog of a season. And the one good thing is that Maeda has started to turn around and potentially is increasing his own trade value right before the deadline.
Right, and that was going to be my follow-up was, you know, Kenta Maeda, Jose Berríos, all these guys. Are the Twins expected to blow it up? Are they expected to clean house come trade deadline in two weeks? Are they expected to clean house? And is Maeda part of that? Is he more than likely going to get moved?
Well, Maeda and Berríos are definitely guys that are getting asked about a ton. You know, Pineda's a rental because he's a free agent. And so I think there's a natural assumption that he'll get traded. I think there's an assumption that Nelson Cruz could get traded because he's a free agent also. Maybe Andrelton Simmons. If someone's looking for someone living and breathing, Jay Happ would be available, but I don't know that that's a great addition other than maybe adding a five to your rotation at this point. But you look at the can they substantially improve their club, and the only way they might be able to do that is to dig deep. And the problem is that I think when they look at Trevor Larnach and Alex Kirilloff and the way they've stepped up this year, that they think they have a chance to compete next year. And it's just difficult. It makes things more difficult because obviously you don't know how deep you should dig if you think you can win next year. And this was a team that was built to compete last year and was built to win this year. And I think they believe that it still can. And that just makes it the equation so tough, because if you trade Berríos, you're blowing off 2022. There's just no chance you're competing next year if you trade him, even though he's a free agent after next year. If you trade Maeda, it's pretty much the same thing, unless you can, you know, between trading one of the two, go out and find a way to get a really reliable starter back. And that just seems difficult. I mean, the Twins have done a good job at discovering pitching, but that's the thing that killed them this year, is that their methods of finding pitching brought them this staff, and this staff has blown up. And, you know, it's going to be something that they have to go out and prove that they can compete next year. I mean, they certainly have a great position player core. If they broke some of that up in the offseason, which would make sense to me to maybe move on from one or two of the guys that's been around forever, then you can reconfigure things. But there is a lot of work to be done no matter what way they decide to go about it.
We're talking with Dan Hayes, beat writer for the Minnesota Twins, talking some deadline here, trade deadline, what could possibly happen. What about Josh Donaldson? I know he has a massive contract, but I've heard rumors on the Mets possibly inquiring on him. What is the possibility that Josh Donaldson gets moved at the deadline?
Well, I think if Donaldson got moved, then you could see Berríos get moved, or you could see Maeda get moved. I think Donaldson would be the key to it all. Because if they were able to move him, you know, you're freed up of some cash. And also, I think you brought Donaldson in to win. I mean, he got a four-year, $92 million contract ahead of the 2020 season and was seen as one of those pieces that put you over the top. And he came here expecting to win. And I think, you know, I don't know that if I was him, we've seen how outspoken he is on the sticky substances this last month and a half, you know. I don't know that that's the kind of guy that's going to be happy if your team is rebuilding. So potentially, yeah, I could see them trading him, and it would open up doors to a deeper dive as far as breaking up the roster in July and the off season. But, you know, like you said, there's a lot of money left. It's somewhere there's $50 million beyond this season. It's $21 million a year. Plus an $8 million contract buyout for the fifth year of his deal. But there's still, you know, somewhere in the range of $10 million, or maybe it's more like $9 million left this year, too. So we're talking about $59 million. And I think the Twins could eat a substantial chunk of it, somewhere in the $20 million range. Maybe they would probably offer to eat the rest of this year's salary and then take chunks over the next 2 years each year. But it wouldn't surprise me. It would allow them the flexibility to do some of the things they couldn't do this year. And I think that's got to be appealing to them. They really couldn't attack the bullpen appropriately and spend big money on it because they went after a big ticket item in Josh Donaldson. That ate up a lot of their payroll. And I think that could certainly change how they address things next year if he weren't here. But you're giving away Josh Donaldson, which is, you know, with Donaldson and potentially Nelson Cruz gone, that's, you got to find some veteran leadership for sure. And it's going to, like I said, it just makes things all, it's a very difficult situation. And I'm glad that I'm just watching from the outside as opposed to having to tear down myself.
Yeah. Could you imagine having to make these decisions? Like it's nice that we could just, you know, speculate on what could possibly happen, because man, my head would be spinning right now, especially with the Twins, because they had a good team like you know, last year and years before, and on paper, like, they were pretty good. And yeah, the pitching just didn't pan out. But you figure they have the talent to where it could possibly turn around next year. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Byron Buxton is one of the most dynamic players in baseball. Like, Byron Buxton is, if he stays healthy, you have a team that should go far and should go far potentially in the postseason. For whatever reason, it hasn't happened. And, you know, he came back from his grade 2 hip strain, and 2.5 games later got drilled in the hand and broke his left pinky. So can't hold a bat for 4 to 6 weeks. And that was yet another gut punch that the team has dealt with. But yeah, you're right. There are so many intriguing pieces on this team. The infield is full of them. The catching situation with Mitch Garver back when he does come back, and he had a groin contusion, which is a kind way of describing the injury when he took a foul ball, a direct hit, and then had surgery. When he comes back, you have a legit four hitter and a catcher, and you have a really good crew in Alex Kirilloff and Trevor Larnach, who are really finding their ways early. I mean, there are tons of pieces here that suggest you could win next year, but can they get enough pitching? That is such a huge question. It is really a daunting one for sure.
And you mentioned Byron Buxton, right, with his injury history. Is it almost at that point to where the Twins have to think about moving on from Buxton? Because if you can't be on the field, I mean, you have very little value to a team, right? And he seems to be always injured.
Well, I mean, would it be worse that you moved on from him and he found health with someone else and became someone else's star? Or would you rather live with it? Because I think they see the potential. I think what you just have to do is get a stronger center field backup for the inevitable times that he does hit the injured list and roll with it that way. Max Kepler, they've talked about him being that guy in the past, but you know, his legs don't like center field, and he doesn't prepare at the start of the year for anything but right field. And when he's asked to play center, you know, it takes a toll on him. So I think they need to get a real backup center field option, someone who can relieve Buxton for 2 weeks at a time if needed. But I don't think that moving on from Buxton is the play, because what if he goes to New York and just becomes a star? What if he goes anywhere and becomes a star? It's just a worse look for the team. As frustrating as his injury struggles have been, I just don't know that you can do that.
Yeah, whatever the Twins decide to do, just please don't help New York teams. Just don't do it. Just don't do it. Don't send him to the Yankees. That would be like the worst thing. Could you imagine his injury history with the Twins, and he goes to the Yankees and just turns into a superstar?
I think there's a better chance that they'll help out the Bay Area teams, to be honest. I mean, they match up well trade partner-wise with the Giants. I know the Giants need bullpen. And wouldn't it be fun to see a Tyler Rogers, mirror twin bullpen for the Giants? But also, really, you look around, there's only probably two or three teams that need Nelson Cruz, and Oakland is one of them. And Oakland also could use some bullpen help, and the Twins have Caleb Thielbar, who's a lefty, who's probably more affordable. But Nelson Cruz obviously could come in and help that lineup out significantly, especially, you know, or you know, I wrote it today in one of our stories. Max Kepler could help the A's solve some of those right field woes if the A's were willing to surrender some good prospects. So I think there's a better chance to help out those teams. Although, obviously, you mentioned Donaldson and the Mets. I know that rumor exists. Barrios, I think the Mets are interested, but I think the ask is really high on him. And I don't know that the Mets would be the team to make that buy on him. But, you know, if they did, you know, certainly the Twins were being getting paid handsomely for it.
Have there been any rumblings of Barrios to possibly the Dodgers, because with their situation that they have going on with Trevor Bauer, right? And Clayton Kershaw just went on the IL,
right?
So they're kind of, you know, beat up at the starting pitching in the rotation. Is there any rumblings there?
Well, I think the unfortunate thing for them was Dustin May got hurt earlier in the year. And Tony Gonsolin is playing a key role. And I would think the Twins would want one of those guys back if they were going to give them Barrios in order to try and compete next year. I mean, I think if you added Gonsolin to this rotation, you'd be feeling pretty decent about your chances next year, just with the talent that's there. And I don't know that the Dodgers can part with them. The Dodgers certainly have it in the farm system to pay the price tag. The Padres
are a team that, you know, I think the Padres are more interested in the Pineda rental. But, I mean, look how many bold moves they've made under A.J. Preller the last couple of years. Wouldn't it be shocking of them to come in and go over the top and just be, hey, let's get Berríos and add him to our already amazing pitching staff. And, you know, that would certainly put San Diego ahead of Los Angeles. And I do feel like that's going to be an interesting race to watch the trade deadline buy race between the Dodgers and the Padres, because obviously those two teams are, I love the Giants. I love what they're doing. I don't know how they're, I mean, the pitching staff is amazing, but you wonder like how the Giants are doing this and comparatively those rosters and how talented and San Diego and the Dodgers are. It's amazing the Giants have stayed in first this long and played as well as they have and outpaced them, because man, those two teams are loaded and you know they're willing to do whatever at the deadline. And the Giants are still, I have to think the Giants feel like they're still rebuilding. Like you don't just go, you know, the core is still there. The Crawfords and the Posies and the Belts are still there. Those are guys they thought they were going to be winning well after those guys retired, essentially. And here they are in the middle of things in July. So NL West has been very intriguing, and it should really be intriguing over the next 20 days.
Yeah, Dan, I'm still trying to figure out how the Giants are in first place right now. I have no clue. I was even at the game last night looking at the lineup. Like, we have Lamont Wade Jr. Hitting leadoff. We got Jason Vossler in, like, the 5-6 spot. I'm like, how are we winning these games? Like, I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm still kind of waiting for it to fall apart, but it hasn't happened yet, and I'm along for the ride.
It shows you how important the pitching is, and Gausman and Wood and Desclafani. And, you know, I mean, when Johnny Cueto is like your third or fourth best pitcher, you're in pretty good shape right there. And the part that would absolutely need to be secured, in my opinion, is that bullpen. Just because, man, there's so many what ifs there. And it just depends if they want to, how much they're going to pay, because I'm sure they could find some solutions. The Twins did a really good job in 19 of they just brought on Sergio Romo, and they acquired Sam Dyson. That didn't work out well. And actually that ended disastrously with him getting hurt like a month later, and he wasn't going to be back anyways, but then he had his off field issues after the fact. And that trade was not good, but you know, they brought in Romo and it solidified a young core of relievers. And the Giants are going to have to do something. You can piece it together that way and find some solid options, but I just feel like they need something more certain than ninth. And whether or not they want to pay for that, that really matters. But Taylor Rogers certainly could be that guy. And the Twins would definitely want a lot for him, because he's not a free agent until after next season as well. And you know, we know the price tag consistently goes up when there's 1+ years available. And Rogers would be a good addition and guy that can come in and pressure spots. But, do the Giants want to do that? I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the Giants end up doing. Taylor Rogers would really help out the back end of that bullpen. I mean, they've kind of solidified it, like pieced it together, as you said, Jake McGee, Tyler Rogers even. I mean, he's in there at the back end also. But he doesn't have that overpowering stuff like his brother. You know what I mean? And that's something that I think that you would need in an October push. So hopefully, I mean, Dan, maybe I shoot you a text in a couple of weeks because we make some trades. Maybe that's what we'll be doing in a couple of weeks from now. Hopefully.
Yeah, hey, we can just take over the two teams. We can take over the Giants, and I'll take over the Twins, and we'll just work something out. So
yeah, let's do it, man. Hey, Dan, it's always fun catching up with you, man. I really appreciate the time, and you have a good one in Minnesota. Don't dwell on the losses too much, and I know you're going to be busy around the trade deadline with all your pieces, man. But have a good one. I appreciate it.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me on, Walter. It was fun.
And again, that was Dan Hayes, beat writer for the Minnesota Twins for The Athletic. Go ahead and give him a follow on Twitter at DanHayesMLB to get all of your up-to-date news on the Minnesota Twins, because if it is how everyone is expecting, it's going to be a very, very busy trade deadline period for the Minnesota Twins. So there's going to be tons of storylines to come out of there. Make sure that you're following Dan to get all of your up-to-date news as it gets closer. Maybe one of those guys on the Twins are going to come to your team. Hopefully we get a Taylor Rogers. Maybe we get a Jose Berrios. Who knows what's going to happen, but it's going to be fun as we get closer. Now, hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. I sure did. Dan is always a great guest to have on. Maybe we'll have him on closer to the deadline to see what ends up happening in Minnesota. But if not, we'll definitely touch base with him. Maybe when he comes to the Bay Area. Who knows? We'll see what he's doing down the line. But hope you guys enjoyed that conversation as well. Hope you enjoyed listening. Remember to subscribe to Passion for the Pastime to get all of your up-to-date content as we move forward, because it is now the second half. I hope you enjoyed the All-Star game, All-Star break, the home run derby. Everything was exciting, but now we get down to business. This is the second half of the year where dreams are made. It's going to be exciting, and first, we got to get to that trade deadline. So we got more content coming up in the coming weeks. Make sure that you guys subscribe and follow all of our social media pages on Instagram, on Twitter. Make sure you follow me on there, and we're going to keep this thing rolling. So you guys have a good one, be safe, and I'll talk to you next time.